Hey y'all, welcome back to Erase the State. Matty K here. With everything happening in Iraq, I've been kind of struggling with what's been going on, trying to wrap my head around things and the timeline and what comes next. So I wanted to bring somebody on to help us wade through some of that. And I could think of nobody better than Scott Horton. So with that being said, here he is. Let's start the show. I'm sure you're a very busy man today, given all that's happened. Given the current action that just took place in Iraq, I've been struggling already to wrap my head around what's been going on. So I know we recently had a protest at the embassy there, which Iraq may or may not have been involved in, which I guess was in retaliation for us killing some other militants. That was in retaliation for some other shit that we did. So can you kind of step us through how we got to that point quickly, and then relate that to what actually happened last night with General Soleimani?
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, certainly if you turn it to TV, they go, well, these guys shot a rocket at our guys, so then we bombed some of their guys, and then they had a riot at our embassy, and then we killed their general. So I guess you got to start somewhere. But as you point out, America and Israel have been bombing them since the summer. Have been bombing these Shiite militias, and it's the Israelis taking the lead on it, although it's been reported that they've been launching some of these strikes out of American-dominated Iraqi Kurdistan there in the north against these Shiite groups who are essentially America's allies in the war. The same guys that we've been fighting for since 2003 are the guys that we're mad at and bombing now. You know, but the most important kind of thing leading up to this, not to justify their side firing a rocket. However, the true antecedent here is the American and Israeli effort to attack what they claim are Iranian efforts to arm up these, which this is pretty nonsensical to me, to arm up these Iraqi Shiite militias for use against Israel somehow. I guess as a transit point on the way to give the weapons to Hezbollah or something, doesn't have to make sense. It's just, you know, the Israelis essentially really resenting the results of the war that they worked so hard to encourage us to launch back in 2003, and specifically Benjamin Netanyahu and the group close to him in the Likud party in Israel.
Well, and so how accurate are these claims that that's what's going on?
That which is going on. Oh, you mean that the Iranians have been arming Hezbollah through Iraq or something? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Not really. I mean, they have planes. They can fly to southern Lebanon. There's this whole narrative about this is why we have to stay in Syria, is because now there's a land bridge, otherwise known as a road, right? A land bridge that runs essentially unbroken from Tehran through Baghdad to Damascus to southern Lebanon. And so America has to stay there to break this. But there's nothing that they can deliver to Hezbollah by truck that they can't fly there in a plane in any real way. And I don't, you know, but it is true that, you know, through the entire Syrian war, the Israelis have hit Iranian targets and Hezbollah targets inside Syria all along. And the Syrians have never retaliated against them. And neither have the Iranians or Hezbollah for that matter. But, you know, from time to time, they'll go, oh, there's an arms depot and we don't like it. I remember when they first started doing that, I thought, wow, I wonder if the Israelis are panicking that these arms are falling into the hands of Al-Qaeda. Nope, not a single time. It was always in favor of Al-Qaeda. But you know, when they did it, it was their worry was that they were going to fall into the hands of Hezbollah, the Shiites, the Iranians' friends,
right?
Not the bin Ladenites.
And so is that the sort of stuff that was taking place that initially led to the first strike that got the contractor killed and the four, I guess, service members injured at whatever outpost they were at?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And then America attacked this Shiite militia base and killed, I think, 27 people in response for that. And then they had this, this riot, I guess, protest at the American embassy. And it was all blown out of proportion. I mean, first of all the State Department and regular civilian employees had already been evacuated. There was nobody there left except Marines anyway. And then this was not the Benghazi annex consulate out in the middle of a hornet's nest in in Libya in 2012 type of a situation. This is the green zone. And the Iraqi police, again, the factions that are mad at us here are the same ones we put in power here. So they're not going completely to war against the Americans. So the police let them get to the outside visitor's gate and do a little PR stunt at the visitor's gate. But the cops are standing right there and never let them get beyond that. And it was just to make a bit of a statement that they were angry that America was, you know, hitting their targets, their paramilitary forces target. But to then, you know, hit the Iranians' top general is a huge escalation from that. I mean, nobody died at the protest at the embassy.
Is this just
and this general,
serendipitous? Is this just serendipitous timing that we could sort of blame all this as a step up in escalation?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the Iranians are going to do in response. I'm sure it'll be something. But
I mean, the attack on Soleimani itself. I mean, it now that we're kind of saying, well, this is a retaliation for the attack on our embassy. I mean, is that?
Well, in fact, now they're saying they were preempting the next thing he was going to do, which I think is really, you know, made up. I don't think that's really true. I think they probably were worried that they were going to have a Benghazi type thing. And so they said, let's do something. Maybe they wanted to punish him for that. They wanted to take the opportunity. Here's something tough that we could do. But, you know, OK, so here's the thing about it. This guy, Soleimani, this is essentially like if the Iranians had assassinated General Mattis or somebody of that stature. Can you imagine the reaction on this side to that? So in that sense, it's a really big deal. But in the other sense, it was one very limited strike in Iraq. And it was meant, and I'm not promising that this is how it's going to work out, but I think it's pretty apparent that it was meant to be the last word on this latest cycle of incidents here. Now, I don't think that it's really going to work out that way. I think that they've gone really pretty far with this, and the Iranians are going to have to do something back.
Yeah, no, I know I've seen the Iranian Security Council's meeting in emergency meetings, and then even Iraq is pulling together and requesting that we pull out. And I know a lot of this seems almost too carefully planned that, you know, we were right around the time of announcing a supposed drawdown. And then, of course, something happens like it always does to keep us there or further draw us into conflict. So
I don't think they were ever planning on drawing down from Iraq. I mean, from their plan is Iraq War 3.5. That is what's the war against what's left of the Islamic State, ISIS, in Western Iraq, old Al-Qaeda in Iraq. That was the plan was for that to go on forever. Again, we're allied with these Shiite militias. These same Shiite paramilitary forces are just adjuncts of the Iraqi army that Donald Rumsfeld built. When they arrested the leader of the Badr Corps today, that Badr Corps, those are the guys that George W. Bush fought Iraq War II for. They were the guys that Rumsfeld used in the El Salvador option. We took their side in the civil war to kill and ethnically cleanse or sectarianly cleanse the Sunni Arabs out of Baghdad. The USA created this, you know, supermajority chauvinist Shiite government. This is what drove the Sunnis into the arms of the bin Ladenite Sunni radicals on the other side, was this whole policy. And the Americans have been spitting mad at the results of their own blunder ever since then. And that's why they backed the bin Ladenites, again, the Sunni radicals, against the Shiite-aligned Baathists in Syria. They said, well, if we gave Iran Baghdad, maybe we can take Damascus from them. But when they built the Islamic State there, the Islamic State didn't go west and sack Damascus. It went east and took over all of Western Iraq and created the whole caliphate. So then they had to launch Iraq War III on behalf of those same Shiite militias they fought Iraq War II for that they wish they hadn't done. They did the same thing again and fought for Soleimani. The U.S. Air Force, as recently as the first year of the Trump administration, well, as recently as the day before yesterday, the U.S. military is there fighting for Soleimani and his militiamen, his friends in the Iraqi Shiite government, against what's left of al-Qaeda. That's the absurdity of this whole thing. They're mad that they keep fighting for Iran, and yet they keep fighting for Iran.
So today, you know, there's a lot of the typical Republicans and neocons, and you know who these accounts are on Twitter, right? That they're all coming out and saying, hey, you know, if you know a serviceman, you've been in the VA clinic or the hospital and somebody's missing an arm or a finger, you know, that this guy's to blame, right? But on the same coin, like you mentioned, you know, he's sort of been responsible for helping us get rid of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So how do we square these two?
No, it's a lie. That's how we square. It's just not true. I mean, so in Iraq War II, 4,500 Americans died. Now, 4,000 of those died fighting against the Sunni-based insurgency tied with Al-Qaeda in Iraq for the Shiite militias. David Petraeus turned these same Shiite militias. He built the Iraqi army out of them. And then 500 American soldiers died in the surge of 2007 and 8. I guess a very small number of these could be attributed to the Shiite uprising of 2004, which was very brief, in Najaf in the spring of 04. But then there was another fight against the Shia during the surge. At the same time, we're helping them finish their ethnic cleansing campaign against the Sunni Arabs and kicking them out of the capital. Petraeus, ironically, was going toward the most nationalist, the most anti-Iranian of all the Shiite leaders, Muqtada al-Sadr, and was attacking him, while America was favoring the most pro-Iranian factions from the Supreme Islamic Council and the Dawa Party. And they were trying to marginalize Sadr. They thought they could work with the Supreme Islamic Council guys, which was no more true than it was about Sadr, really. But they chose to attack the Shiites, and then the Shiites defended themselves in that situation. But in every incident where one of their bombs went off or one of their bullets hit home, America blamed it all on Iran. And the syllogism goes that an Iraqi Shiite is essentially an automaton. All of them are acting, whenever they act against our interests anyway, are acting at Iranian behest. When we're doing everything they want, somehow that's brilliant. And so they blamed every single EFP bomb, explosively formed penetrator, roadside homemade landmine in 2007 and 8 on Iran, but they never proved it because it wasn't true. The bombs were being made in Iraq by Iraqis. The Iranians didn't have anything to do with it at all. And the whole, you know, propaganda line was debunked over and over and over again. Now, it's true that Iran was helping some of these Shiite militias, the Sadrist militias, resist America at that time. But it was a fight that America had picked totally. It was 99% David Petraeus's fault and 1% Qasem Soleimani's fault in that sense. I mean, why turn on the guys that we fought the whole war for? So then here's their chain of logic. Any American who was killed by a Shiite in the war was killed by the Iranians. And so then that's 500 or 600 of them. And then forget that the other 4,000 were killed in the war for these guys. And so then you just pretend that essentially everybody, every American that got killed over there, it was the Iranians who were behind the insurgency all along and all of this stuff, when that's just not true. The insurgency was against the American-Iranian joint condominium in that country. You know, the leaders of the Supreme Islamic Council, when they came across the border from Iran into Iraq in 2003 on George Bush's heels, their orders from the Supreme Leader of Iran was do everything the Americans want. Get along with them. Say, yes, sir, you will inherit this entire thing. And that's exactly what happened. These are our allies we're fighting here, not our enemies.
So what do you make of the other folks who were killed along in the strike with Soleimani? I guess he was the leader of Qatib Hezbollah. What's the connection there?
Well, so yeah, Qatib al-Hezbollah, there are a bunch of different of these Shiite militias now, and I'm not exactly certain the full extent of the relationship. I guess it apparently goes without saying, and I sure wouldn't dispute it. It sounds right to me that this particular group was very much backed by Iran, which is the same for Asaib al-Haq and the Badr Brigade. Again, they just arrested the leader of the Badr Brigade. At least they didn't drone strike him, but they arrested him. But this is the guy, again, that America's been fighting for since 2003. I'm going, you arrested Amiri, really? The guy that is the current prime minister is from his umbrella group, the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq. He recently resigned. I guess he's sitting on a caretaker government now. But he's from Skiri, the Dawa Party. I mean, the Badr Brigade that Amiri is the head of, that's Skiri's militia. These are Donald Rumsfeld's men. These are Paul Wolfowitz's men that we're claiming are the worst guys in the whole world. And which is I'm not taking their side, but I'm just saying they're not the enemies of the American people. It wasn't Hezbollah backed by Iran that knocked our towers down. That was the bin Ladenites that did that. And so our government is upset that Iran declared independence from us back in 1979 and that they keep inheriting the benefits of all of our anti-Iranian actions in the region. But whose fault is that? It's Bush's fault for getting rid of Saddam for them. It's Obama's fault for backing the Islamic State against them, which totally blew up in his face and made him end up having to change sides again and go back to their side. How do you blame the Ayatollah? Because the Americans continue bringing him Christmas gifts.
What do you think is the next step here? I've seen the news that, you know, Soleimani's already been replaced. Is anything going to come out of these Security Council meetings? What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I mean, the good news is that both sides have way too much to lose in a real conflict. And the negative way to put that is we better not let this spin into a real war, because we have about 5,000 something American troops and who knows who else personnel in Iraq right now. We have another few thousand in Syria who would be vulnerable possibly to Iranian or Hezbollah attacks inside Syria. We're now we're not in conflict with them, in direct conflict, and have no reason to be. We have, I don't know how many troops in Kuwait, tens of thousands anyway. We have approximately 15,000 soldiers in Afghanistan, Marines in the Helmand province, and Army Rangers and whoever else up at the Bagram Air Base there. And then we have a massive Navy base. The Fifth Fleet is stationed in Bahrain, and there's a massive air base in Qatar. There's another, you know, I don't know how many bases inside Saudi, an air base in Oman, and unlimited numbers of economic targets from Kuwait all the way down the Persian Gulf. And not only that, but Iran has the reach to hit American interests almost anywhere in the world, probably including in North America, certainly in Europe, but why not Malaysia or Iraq or Afghanistan or anywhere, any of the Central Asian stands where the Americans probably don't belong in the first place, where they can be gotten. And so, you know, again, Americans, and I was raised this way too, we all are, we have this idea that just there's this other set of rules that apply to us. But really imagine if the Iranians had assassinated David Petraeus or General Mattis. And at the height of his powers, when he was out there winning a war, winning a war. I know it's hard to imagine David Petraeus winning a war, but bear with me for the sake of the hypothetical here. You know, if he was our greatest general, not just in public relations, but in reality, out there saving the world from ISIS, not backing it. And then the, you know, someone had killed him, how the Americans would react to something like that. That's how the Iranians feel right now. So I think that hopefully they don't do anything stupid, but I fear that they're going to do smart stuff. You know, I don't know what it's going to be, but it's not going to be nothing.
So is this going to turn into, you know, another hot war, another front, or is this going to be contained to Iraq, do you think, or the current battlefields at least?
Well, that's certainly, you know, one way that they could do it would be to just make the Iraqis suffer through another one of these sort of proxy wars there. Although we don't have much forces. And what are we going to do? Start backing ISIS against them again?
Well, it's worked so well the first few times.
Yeah, who do we have to use against them in Iraq? We're not just going to send in Marines to attack the Baghdad government that we installed in power there. So there's really not much to do. If the Iranians play their cards in Iraq to the full extent, then I guess that would mean getting the, you know, making sure that the Iraqi government kicks America out now and withdraws any pretension of a legal mandate for us to be there. There's no UN Security Council resolution or anything. We're there under their, you know, quote unquote invitation right now. And so if their parliament rescinds that, they really could kick us out. I don't know what Trump would do then, but probably nothing. I don't know what he could do.
How do you think this bodes for him in 2020?
Well, I mean, from my own perspective, it just makes him, it just proves all the worst of what people said about him. I don't mean all the false accusations of treason with the Russians and all of that, but just that, I guess the way I put it, and you know, don't get me wrong, it's not a perfect metaphor, but you know, we wanted a Ron Paul, and what we got with this guy is more of an Andrew Jackson, and not as accomplished as Jackson, but hey, essentially, he just likes kicking butt. He likes being a right-wing, fake, macho, tough guy, and sometimes he says anti-war stuff, but mostly that's just coming from kind of his businessman's point of view, that it just costs too much, but at the end of the day, it's other people's money, so he doesn't really care, and he certainly doesn't have any kind of real strategic understanding of the Iranian, you know, alliance of power, who's on whose side, and why are we so deeply in bed with the Saudis and the Israelis on all this and all these things. He doesn't know about that stuff, and he's not interested in all that stuff. So we're kind of, I don't think any of us can really safely predict what he's going to do, right? He could just, like with Venezuela, he launched this failed coup, and then he was like, meh, forget it, and got over it completely.
That sure disappeared quickly.
Yeah, everybody pray that he just loses attention for this and goes and picks up, you know, maybe Kanye West needs another prisoner released or something, and we can just get him off on something else.
Sure, sure. All right, Scott, well, thanks for putting a little more clarity to this fucked up situation that's going on over there. If people wanted to learn more about all of this, where could they do that?
Antiwar.com, man. We're on top of everything for you. News.antiwar.com is the great Jason Ditz, and he's absolutely perfect on all this stuff. And I'm actually working on an article now, Iraq War 4, ? And it's my sort of causal timeline of whose fault this all is. So that's going to get posted, I guess, probably not until Sunday night, Monday. That'll be on antiwar.com. You know, otherwise, stay off of the TV. Try to read Patrick Coburn. Elijah Magnier is one of the greatest reporters. You can find him on Twitter. Moon of Alabama, it sounds like a silly name for a blog, but it's this guy named Bernard from Germany, who's this really bright guy who writes lots of great stuff all the time. And of course, Dan McAdams and Ron Paul do a show 5 days a week, or Dan and Ron are 4 days a week. Then Ron's on Fridays with Chris Rossini on economics. But Dan McAdams and Ron Paul are both absolutely just perfect on every single thing under the sun. And not just, you know, their opinion and principles, but they absolutely know everything about what they're talking about every day, you know, unparalleled stuff. And then, of course, there's Doug Bandow and the guys in the Foreign Policy Department at Cato, Ted Carpenter and John Glazer, Chris Coyne. Those guys all do great work. I don't know if they know about who's specializing in this over there, but you can count on them anyway.
Scott, you take care. You're welcome back anytime, man. Thanks.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, y'all. That's it. Thanks for listening. Y'all know what to do. Tell your mom, tell your dad, tell your dog, tell a friend, find somebody who doesn't listen, shove it in their face, make them download it. See y'all next week. Peace. Cross a 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky-tonk filled with one-night stands. Take a tell him fire with a gun so steel. In a dark house space just to seal the deal. Yeah, top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.